This is E.L. Rosengarten, and joining us on Radio Universe is John Linnell, co-founder along with John Flansburgh. Throughout your 33-year career with They Might Be Giants, you've created numerous tracks for television commercials and movies, including The Daily Show theme, Bossamy featured on Malcolm in the Middle, and the 2015 Return to Dial song. Thank you for taking the time to talk.
Thank you for speaking with me.
I wanted to, and a lot of people have wanted to extend their congrats as well for your success on the Dial-A-Song project. Radio Universe has been airing it weekly Sunday evenings, and I've been very impressed with the rate and the quality of the videos coming out weekly.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, when people talk about success, they usually mean something more, you know, monetary. Clearly, what you mean is that we are artistically and creatively successful, which is my ultimate fondest dream. And so that's nice to hear you say that.
Definitely. I hear a lot of positive feedback about the project, and everybody that I hear giving feedback likes to talk about their favorite videos that have been coming out, and they just keep getting better. I'm just very impressed.
Great. That's nice. Thanks. Nice to hear that.
What has it been like developing the recent Dial-A-Song project versus the classic Dial-A-Song?
It's been hell. No, it's been great. It's a lot of work. We never worked this hard back in the old days because part of the reason is with the original Dial-A-Song, we were making demos and sticking them on a phone line, and we didn't have this, you know, overwhelming sense that this stuff was going to be scrutinized. Like, obviously people were calling on a phone line, listening over the phone. It was very, like, low bandwidth telephone signal. And so the stakes seemed very low. And not that the stakes are extremely high now, but we are, you know, this is obvious, but we're doing much more polished recordings now, and it requires a lot more thought and a lot more perspiration from us. Over this year, we've been writing and recording songs to put out one every week, and we're really trying to do studio quality material on this go around, and we're doing a lot of songs. I mean, there are 52 songs coming out, you know, one per week this year, but we've written more material than that just to cover our asses, basically. We were trying to keep the quality high. We're doing, you know, it's just a lot of work. But, you know, I think it's pretty satisfying. I mean, I'm feeling like we're getting close to the finish line, and actually, to be fully forthcoming, we've, I think, written and recorded everything that's going to be out by the end of this year. So we're feeling like we have turned in the assignment that we gave ourselves. We've more or less met this insane challenge of trying to crank out all these songs, and I feel pretty good about it now. I mean, it was some very panicky periods this year where we were kind of doing, like, you know, that the quality was going to start to smell bad. I think we've done an okay job. Speaking in terms of the stuff that's yet to come out, and obviously leave it to other people to judge.
Are you guys going to do anything special after December 29th to celebrate? Or are you just going to try to sleep in after all this?
Well, we're doing New Year's shows here in New York. I suppose we'll have an onstage celebration. We're doing a couple New Year's shows. The 31st, the 1st, and the 2nd are the dates in Brooklyn.
I will be at the 1st and the 2nd of January.
Oh, excellent. Great. Brilliant. And then we're actually not stopping after that. We're going to head over to the UK. And then, yeah, we're flying to London in January. We're doing a whole bunch of shows in the UK. We are taking a break, and then we're going to be hitting the road in the United States for the end of March, the beginning of April, I guess. And then at that point, we'll be going to the hospital after that.
I hope not. Oh, my gosh. With the upcoming tour schedule, what drew you guys to return to Australia in November and the UK in early 2016?
Well, the Australian thing was the result of a surprise response that we got in 2013. We went over there. We had booked a month to be in Australia, but we hadn't booked all the shows. And we really just got a much bigger response than we expected. So we started adding shows. The shows were selling out. We added more and more shows and pretty much crammed twice as many shows into that Australian tour as we had originally planned. And we felt like the general sense was people liked us. It was really an overwhelming response. So, you know, it's very expensive to go far away and tour. We haven't played in Japan in more than 10 years, for example, probably more than 15 years, even though that's a place that obviously, you know, they used to like come out and hear us play, but it's just so expensive to bring people that far and to tour around that we don't do as much of it as we used to, but clearly there was a strong response we're getting from Australia, so that kind of set the, you know, we came up with this plan for this year based on how well everything happened in 2013. So we're looking forward to that. I mean, it's a very stoning experience to travel to the opposite side of the world and try and perform because everybody is so jet-lagged. It's crazy how jet-lagged you get from flipping to the opposite side of the planet. It's like having the flu. It feels like, you know, you can't believe how messed up you feel. But I mean, the shows all went well and 2 years ago. I was meeting the journalist this week from Australia and saying, it's good you're talking to me now because I won't be making any sense the next time you see me. But yeah, so we're doing that. And the UK is generally a reliable place for us to play. We had a hit song, had a couple of hit songs in the UK over the years. So that might be the strongest foreign market for us is Britain. And it's always a pleasure to go back there. So that'll be fun.
Two obscure questions. How is touring different abroad versus the U.S., and what's the strangest thing you've lost in a hotel room?
Strange. I don't lose strange things. I only lose dear things, things that are not strange, things that make me sad when I lose. I usually lose my sweater. That's kind of the standard piece of gear is some sweater. You know, I'm rushing out the door. I'm overheated. I've thrown the sweater behind the chair. And then we check out of the hotel, and then by the time I'm in the next city, I remember. That would be the typical thing. I'm trying to be careful about not losing stuff on Earth. What was the other one about what's it like to be overseas?
How is touring outside the U.S. different than domestically?
It's not that different. It's fun to go to exotic places. Something I'm happy to have been doing for most of my adult life is visiting interesting places. And it's a great way to see a place as opposed to showing up as a tourist because you have a much more engaged connection with the place. You're meeting people and you're doing business with people. We're going to clubs and we're organizing our tour and our shows. And it's not the same thing as just checking into a hotel and then going sightseeing, although we try and do sightseeing as well. But it's nice. I recommend it. I think it's fun to play overseas and learn about other people. And you have a very intimate connection to these other places. It's not just a matter of talking to the cab driver. So that's good. I mean, touring is hard. I feel like it's kind of unseemly to complain because it's a good job. We have a kind of a fantasy job. Far be it from me to bitch and moan about the inconvenience or the discomfort.
I guess along the lines of what you do, I was wondering if you could talk about your experience with bringing in different artists and filmmakers on board for the music videos.
Well, the fundamental thing is that we try to give them a lot of freedom. There's a lot of really interesting creative visual artists who will do amazing work if you just let them alone. We give them the demo of the song. We say, like, do your thing. And people come up with incredibly great stuff. Sometimes I feel like the song blossoms for me when I see the visual component that someone has brought to it. It's amazing how much it brings out. And then sometimes you're disappointed, I guess. You look at the video and you're like, that's not what I meant. But yeah, it's great. I love that relationship because we're not dictatorial about... I mean, Flansburgh is kind of the guy who tends to liaise with the video artists. So he could tell you more about this, but I think essentially he doesn't tell them what to do. He just draws on their talents. Bring your A game to this. Here's the song. That has worked really well. And I think people appreciate having their own ideas and coming up with interesting stuff on their own.
I'm curious, for the Mrs. Weeklight video, did you guys use your iPhones or
Yes, we
camera?
Did.
You did?
The short answer is yes. Both. That one we had to do in a hurry. Because we had nothing for that week, you know. I mean, you can kind of tell. It's a very homemade video. John duct taped his phone to the steering wheel.
That's one of my favorite videos, actually.
I love that. I was so excited when I saw what he had done. I put on my son's swimming goggles, you know, like it was just obviously very, very ad hoc kind of thing.
I was happy you brought back the older style of video.
That's what it was, yeah. I mean, you know, we're old guys now. We're not winning any beauty contests.
Oh, you guys are fine.
well, you know, we're comfortable, I guess. We're comfortable with our middle-aged selves.
Do you have a particular style of video that you're fond of that has been coming out with the Dial-A-Song videos?
No, I think the great thing is the variety. What's so thrilling, in a way, is that there's so many different ways to make a visual component. And I like the super minimal stuff. We've done a lot of very, very simple, minimal things for this project because it's really just almost like it's got to have some visual element. It could just be a static thing that looks interesting, and then the song is going to carry it. And then in some cases, somebody's got some amazing idea, and then that becomes the visual component, and then that's even more compelling than the song, possibly. But I love the variety. I like that there's a million ways to do a music video, and that's sort of the name of the game for us musically as well. We like variety.
There was a recent Kickstarter you were a part of. It was the 24-hour plays, and the song that I saw featured with for the promotion was called Right Before Showtime. Was that planned out, improvised, or a combination of the two?
We, for a couple of years running, we did the 24-hour play things, but it was this very secret thing. Like, it's kind of this private thing where they don't allow cameras. And, you know, I try and tell people I did this stuff, and I feel like I'm lying because it's, because there's so little evidence of it. But basically, it was John and I went and hung around with these movie stars for overnight to cook up these 24-hour plays. And it was a very weird and interesting experience. I wrote this song well in advance. I mean, the material that we brought, we were the only ones who got to plan it out ahead. Everything else had to be created on the spot within the 24 hours leading up to the performance, which is a really, you know, cooling experience for the people doing it. We were just the musical interlude. Pressure was not very remotely as high for us. You know, we just come out and play some songs while the performers were getting ready to put on the next play. And then there were a couple of plays I was drafted into because they saw that I had an accordion.
Hey, accordions are awesome.
Accordionist. Yeah, I guess they were just like, that looks good. We'll take that.
What was your part in the show with the accordion? Or you just stood there with an accordion?
Well, in one of them, I was, this play, I mean, again, you have to take my word for it because I don't know whether there's any record of this, but Wallace Shawn was the lead. And I was his mute accordion playing assistant or sort of houseboy or something. And then my long lost twin sibling played by Elizabeth Berkley. I don't know if you know who she is.
Yes.
She was in Showgirls. She was my sister. She shows up and then she is the lover of Catherine Tate, who's the daughter of the Wallace Shawn character. And that was the idea of the play. I mean, it was really, you know, people are delirious when they're writing these things because they're staying up all night. So they tend to be pretty wacky. But that was the one I was in, was basically, it was me and these three people that you've actually ever heard of.
That's awesome.
I know, it was nuts. It was so crazy. And it only happened once. It was just this one performance. Very, very weird and exciting.
Rehearsal, what's up?
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. I saw a play years ago that John Flansburgh was in. Those people are wrong. I actually have the playbook for that.
Oh, yeah. That was terrific.
I kind of hope that comes back eventually. That was a lot of fun.
Perhaps. Maybe someday it will, yeah.
Maybe after Dial Song wraps up.
Right.
Speaking of stuff that's coming out, there have been announcements for the album Why, set to be released on November 27th. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about the album.
We hooked up this material alongside all the other stuff we've been doing for this Dial-A-Song Direct. And we didn't put out everything. Actually, not everything on the kids record will have come out on Dial-A-Song Direct. So there's still a fair amount of material that has yet to be released that you'll hear when it comes out on the album. But I'm pretty happy with it. I think, you know, we generally just were working pretty hard this year trying to make everything come out well. And I think we were, would say that very general idea is that it is a sort of counterpart to our first pre-Disney kids record, which was No. So that's why this one is called Why. And the thing with No was that we were not being assigned any particular job. The Disney records that we made all had themes, and there was a sort of pretense of it being educational, although we were kind of blowing off being very strict about it. We were really wanting it to be entertaining, but for the parents, we had to pretend that it was educational. And with No, we didn't have any sorts of constraints. We were just making a fun, entertaining thing that, again, some sort of low-stakes, interesting, psychedelic children's album. So in some ways, that's sort of where we were at with Why as well. We're just returning to that kind of formula for Why.
Very cool. I was asked to extend this question. You had worked on a number of TV spots with Dunkin' Donuts, and one of the songs, Out of a Tree, is mentioned to be on the kids' album. How are you reworking that to go from a commercial tune to a longer album piece?
Well, the Dunkin' Donuts ads were pretty open-ended. We worked with this guy at this agency, Hill Holliday. He had sort of little phrases that were very tangential to, in fact, mostly had nothing to do with the product they were selling. This utterly soft sell kind of approach. So that's why Get Your Eight-Year-Old Out of a Tree had nothing to do with Dunkin' Donuts. It was just a funny idea that the guy had suggested that Flansburgh wrote a song around. And so the Y version is just an expanded version of that idea. Again, there's no reflection of donut consumption in the song. It's just purely this other idea that was used as the soundtrack to the commercial for donuts.
I got to listen to a collection. Somebody had posted them on YouTube, and I was listening. These are pretty catchy.
That was a really fun project. It was unexpected.
They just kind of let you have free rein on it?
They pretty much wanted us to be ourselves, and they had said, these aren't supposed to sound like commercial. They're supposed to just be funny, interesting songs with activity, and Dunkin' Donuts logo comes at the end. And we actually got paid a lot of money to do them, but we were not thinking, oh, this will also be fun and creative. So that was very surprising, that it's a lot more fun than stuff we've done where we thought we were establishing our credibility or integrity. I mean, this was like, we're doing ads, but this is actually really fun. I'd love to do more work like that. It was not something we expected, and it's not something you would normally expect.
With the upcoming tours, I know you guys do a lot of live segments, and I've had fun watching them over the years. A few of them have been Spin the Dial, Phone Calls from the Dead, Shoehorn with the Glockenspiel. Do you have past live segments that you'd like to see come back?
Oh, we periodically revive stuff that we do in the show. That's what you're referring to as live segments, which I guess anything that's just not playing a song, I guess.
Yeah, I think the recent one is the Human Theremin is one of them.
Human Theremin, yeah. Well, that's a part in the in the middle of one of the songs. Flansburgh conducts the audience. Some of them are just a little interlude. They're just a fun little moment in the midst of playing a song. And then sometimes we do little set pieces that are more independent. Like the Phone Calls from the Dead was almost like a skit. If something seems interesting, we'll do it. I feel like it's not mandatory, you know what I mean? Like we can do a show where we just play songs. But last night we just played songs. We didn't do anything else. And that was a really fun show. We had a great night, I thought. The Music Hall of Blues.
A lot of people were mentioning about the show. Could you talk a bit about that?
Well, the last one, last night, featured the horns. It was three very fine brass and woodwind players. And they, over the years, have done a lot of auxiliary horn section stuff with us. So we kind of cooked up a whole show that was mostly them. And that was great. It was really fun. We had a lot of technical problems, but my sense was that the audience wasn't really aware of how fucked up everything was on stage. So I think the audience had a good time. The horn players had a lot of crazy, crazy chaotic noise in their monitors, and they were putting on a very brave face. They appeared to be having a great time, and I didn't know how terrible the sound was
for
them until after the show was over. But yeah, that was good. So, I mean, we do different themes every month. Next month, November, John and I are going to really go back to our 80s format of playing the two of us with a tape recorder.
Oh, sweet.
For at least part of the show. Yeah, so that'll be the theme of the November show.
How does the tape recorder work in with the show?
We have a foot pedal that turns on and off the tape recorder, and it's more or less the band is the tape recorder. It's the drums and bass and whatever other sounds we want to play along with. And that's, you know, how we started out. John and I played that way for about 10 years, starting in the early 80s, before we ever hired other musicians to play with us. And it's going to be interesting going back to that now because we're so used to playing with live musicians at this point. So we're looking forward to that. It'll be fun.
Very cool. And thank you again for being able to sit down with us.
My pleasure. Nice speaking with you.
Could you leave us with some words to live by?
Nope. I don't have any good advice for anybody. I'm struggling to figure it out myself.
No problem. Or I could rephrase that. If somebody wanted to get started learning an instrument or starting to write music, where's a good place to kind of...
That I can answer.
Okay.
I think the real trick is just to enjoy it and not worry about what it's for. If you like playing music, then it doesn't matter if you'll ever have a job playing music because you'll just have it to enjoy. It'll be a thing you can have all your life. And if you don't like it, you shouldn't be doing it for a job. Just figure out something that's fun that you like doing.
You definitely found your niche if you've been doing it for 3+ decades. It's very impressive.
I still like it, yeah. It's worked in a way to prevent it from becoming more like a job. I think it's fun to experiment and keep it interesting. That's really the key.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Eric. Nice speaking with you.
Yeah, definitely. I'll catch you guys in January.
Great. Good. All right, bye-bye now.
Take care.